IVM.
Hi, I'm Rachita.
And I'm Satyajit.
Welcome to Paperback by the Open Library Project.
We have as our guest today Raj Raman, CEO of MarketSpan Consultants and author of The Smelting Cauldron, which we deep dive into for the first half of the podcast.
In the second half, we also discuss Blue Ocean Strategy by Jan Kim and René Morbon, The Art of the Good Life by Rolf Tobelli, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey, and Triggers by Marshall Goldsmith.
Mr. Raman speaks about 18 industry accounts in this book, of which we've touched upon taxing times, debts and don'ts, and the cash 22 situation, which is, as you rightly guessed, to do with cash flow, and other such challenges faced by Indian SMEs. So let's listen in.
You have skewed cash flows. There are months when your inflows are higher than the outflows. Create fixed deposits and take loans against them. They look better on your balance sheet and cost only 2% more than the FD interest rates at best. It will be significantly lower than your working capital cost. This will also allow you flexibility and speed in terms of getting it done. Be smart and use financial leverage to give you a kicker in terms of profit genuinely. But don't allow the debt merchants to get the kicker for themselves. He summed up with a twinkle in his eye. Both Anjali and Kishore nodded, definitely wiser, and now armed with some clear action points that they could immediately get going on.
Thank you, Raj Raman. That was an excerpt from his book, The Smelting Cauldron. Welcome to Paperback by the Open Library Project. I am your co-host Satyajit, otherwise known as Onion Knight in most food circles. I'm hosting this podcast with my co-founder at the Open Library Project, Rachita Sharma.
Hi guys, my name is Rachita and I'm an ex-banker who gave up my banking profession to follow my passion and run libraries across the world. The Open Library Project is a non-fiction book library service offered to businesses on a subscription basis. We're trying to move away from the run-of-the-mill library concept and setting up rotational and locational curated libraries at co-working spaces, corporates and business incubators. The idea here is to create value, build a knowledge community and encourage a growth mindset amongst our members.
Today we have on the show Raj Raman, author of The Smelting Cauldron. Raj Raman holds an engineering degree from NIT Rourkela and a postgraduate degree in management from IIM Bangalore. He has a rich and diverse experience of over 30 years across industries from manufacturing to services and has been instrumental in the growth and establishment of a number of these enterprises. His stints across the country have enabled him to appreciate and deal with the nuances of a diverse country like India. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you very much.
We're so happy to have you here, sir.
My pleasure being here.
So The Smelting Cauldron is a pragmatic insight into the mindset and processes that confront entrepreneurs and ways to deal with the challenges and pressures. Tell us, sir, how did you come up with this interesting concept and what was the idea behind the title of the book?
What actually happened is we have, as an organization, I run a small boutique consulting firm, and we have been working with SMEs, or small and medium enterprises as they are known, for the last 10 years. And in the course of this, we have worked with them through all kinds of diverse problems.
MarketSpan Consultants
is the name of the organization. And we walked them through diverse challenges. And as we worked with them, one of the realizations that hit me was, listen, the problems sometimes repeat themselves. I mean, we found that there's a pattern across organizations. There are certain behavior traits, there are certain challenges, there are certain confrontations, there are certain environmental factors which bring them to the same set of challenges or guide them into the same grooves. And I said, there must be a better way of adding some value to them for them to be able to deal with it. Okay. Instead of every time waiting to interact with us, meet us, and
it's like a guide.
Yeah. The fact remains that there are over 63 million small and medium enterprises in this country. Now, you can't reach all of them.
Right.
So the better way was to figure out how do we translate these into a set of learnings which they can read about, dwell on it, mull over it, and kind of absorb into their system. And hopefully that will help them deal with these challenges as they get along. So that's the genesis of the book.
Okay. That's great. So, and so there are 18 short stories in the book, right? We were hoping you could share, you know, one of them with our listeners.
One of your favorite ones, maybe, which you may have personally learned something from.
I think the one that is closest to my heart, and that's a question that you ask, I think, is the first one.
Okay.
You know, that one, because it was my first client.
Okay.
And two, it was a classic case of a client trying to move away from being a proprietor, owner-driven organization to professionalizing the setup, as it's called.
Okay.
And it happens to all of them. So, went ahead and hired three very senior professionals, got them on board, and then said, okay, now I've got these guys, so let me get out of their way and let them do their work. 6 months down the line, I got a desperate call from him saying, listen, I need help. I said, what happened? He said, no, you know, these three guys want to quit. Oh. And I've just lost my entire leadership and management team.
Like all three of them.
All three of them at the same time.
Wow.
And I said, what did you do to make it happen?
Yeah.
He says, I did nothing. I said, maybe that's the reason why it happened.
Yeah.
So let's talk.
Right.
So then we went through this whole discussion, and it's captured in the first story. You know, and that really got me thinking, saying, listen, it is easy to tell entrepreneurs that you need to professionalize, you know, and get senior people that will help you grow the business. It's a very nice thing to say. But do they actually know how to do this? Who's going to handhold them? Because it's not about abdicating responsibility. Most of them just walk away saying, okay, I put you in, now you deal with it. I'm
right.
out.
Right.
The fact remains that people who come from large organizations come from a very organized, professional setup.
Culture, yeah.
With
and they step into chaos. So there is a certain amount of handholding that you need to do there.
Right.
There is a change management issue here. You have to allow your existing organization also to deal with the change.
Absolutely.
The fact remains, and pardon my expression, but you know, I was joking with the client. I said, your old bandicoots who exist in the system do not want these three guys to survive.
Right.
Because they feel threatened. They think that these new guys will come in and take away our jobs. And you know, we who have been loyal to this owner for so many years, you know, are forgotten. So let's not, enable them to be successful. So let's create as many problems as we can for them. So, listen, that's human behavior. It's very funny, but that's... So one of the challenges that I always talk about when I talk to SMEs is this whole dichotomy between professional skills and loyalty. There is always a challenge. There is a trade-off. And you have to play that balance. And it has to be top-down. It cannot be driven by anybody else. And I said the answer lies is not letting go. The answer lies in handholding.
Okay.
So I think that's one example of what the book is trying to do.
Very, very relevant, sir. And you quoted the chapter Deaths and Don'ts in the starting. So could you probably give us three lessons that people can take away from, you know, how you can raise funds better or how do you manage your finances an SME?
Okay. First and foremost, when you're running a small organization, I keep telling all SME owners and entrepreneurs that it is about cash flow. It is not about profits.
Right.
Don't get caught in what I call the profit syndrome.
Right.
It doesn't matter if you make 5% profit less, but if your cash flows are better, because in the early stages, it is cash flow that drives the existence of the organization.
Yes.
And a classic example and the story that I've referred to is a long cycle business, any long cycle business. And by definition, you become a long cycle. Because if you're a small vendor or a small SME, most clients would pay you the last year, last in the pecking order for payments.
Okay.
So your credits get stretched. Your suppliers want cash because they don't want to supply to you. They're saying you pay us upfront. So what essentially happens is your working capital cycle, which you planned to be a 3-month or a 4-month cycle, suddenly becomes a 9-month cycle. And when it becomes a 9-month cycle, believe me, you can't take your eye off the ball. You have to manage the cash. So the game is about managing cash, not about managing profits. So that's the first lesson on debt.
So this you would suggest for the first, say, 2-3 years?
I would suggest till such time you think you have built enough buffer cash.
Okay,
see,
right.
Over a period of time, what happens is in most small organizations, As long as you're not taking the money out of the system, you're plowing it back into the business. You start building a small corpus over a period of time, correct, which helps you take care of these ups and downs or the inconsistencies in cash flow. Right. Till you build that, you need to do this.
Right. So we see, in fact, in my business, the onion business, we see this very acutely where we have to pay our onion farmers right on the spot on the day, right, when we buy onions. And for us, the greatest challenge over the last 4 years to stabilize has been cash flow. And I think it's the least talked about. If people are running after profits, but if you just manage your cash flows well enough, you'll be able to run and grow an efficient organization in the long run.
I think if I were to sum it up in one line, manage your cash flows, profits will happen.
Right.
Yeah, I'm sure both of you can also relate to some of these stories because you're also in your early stages and you're building an organization.
Yeah,
you're trying to create a business. Believe me, you will hopefully, and I wish, and I sincerely hope that you guys pick up some pointers from this.
Yeah,
it'll help you be smarter, your business faster.
There was this point which I wanted to discuss, which was about no free lunches. The chapter which talks about, you know, how entrepreneurs often get confronted with opportunities which are too good to be true. And
they often are.
Know, yeah.
They often are. Okay, let me explain this. You know, there are, as you grow your business, you will find, you will meet all kinds of people.
Right.
I know, and as you keep growing, you will start creating an awareness about yourself in the environment, in the circles that you, in your ecosystem.
In the community, yeah.
In the community. So as a result, what happens is you will find all kinds of people will come up to you saying, listen, I want to collaborate with you. I want to partner with you.
Yes.
I want to fund you.
Exactly.
I want to aid you.
Yeah.
I want to aid you. I want to handhold you.
Yeah.
Now you really don't know whether all the aiding and handholding they're talking about, okay, what is the source of all the aiding and handholding? You know, the source of the funding that you get, the kind of people from whom you take the handholding and help, for want of a better term, is equally important. Because you may not realize it now, it'll help you tide over something quickly. Maybe it'll work in the short run, but in the long run, it comes back to bite you. The issue is this, that the next time you looking for some help or raising capital to do the next level of scaling of your business, you will find that a lot of people will stay away. If you have the dubious kind of investor or dubious kind of partner or dubious kind of handholding that you have
taken
on in the past.
Earlier.
Taken on in the past.
Okay.
So you know, your karma works. Believe me.
So even in business, karma plays a big part. So I guess what we would want to discuss further in the book is, so far in the context of even the Open Library project, what is some advice you would just give to us in terms of business advice for two young people starting up? And
I think three, four simple things.
Yeah.
And you can just keep that in mind as you grow your business. Number one, cash flow.
Cash
manage your cash flows
one.
In and out. Don't unnecessarily commit to expenses. Manage your expenses because cash flows. The problem with cash flows is this, you know, typically when you make a business plan, you make a revenue plan and you make a cost estimate, right? If I was you, I would assume my revenue plan only 50% will happen and my costs will get doubled.
Doubled.
Okay.
That's a safe assumption to start with. If you can do that, you have crossed the first hurdle. So that's one.
Okay.
Second is, assess your market very smartly.
Okay.
If you don't understand your market, if you don't map your market, in the process, define your customers very sharply and define your competition very sharply, it can hurt you.
Okay.
It can hurt you because what happens typically is, you know, it's a typical Indian crab mentality, as I call it. You know, they see somebody succeeding, 10 people will jump into the business. And that's a standard process that we follow for any business in this country.
Right.
Okay. And more so in India and less outside. That's why I call it the Indian crab mentality. So what happens is people keep watching you. The day they think that you're being successful, there'll be 10 others who will come and clone your business model. But pump in far more money,
yeah,
and scale far higher and take away your first mover advantage. I mean, essentially, first mover advantage, they don't last.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, because they probably have the funding and they just needed the idea.
They will start with that because they'll say they would have watched you. They would have said, these guys took 4 years because they didn't have funding.
Yeah.
I want to do it in 6 months and I will make sure I come with funding.
So could we redefine it as a first mover's disadvantage in the context of these larger organizations? Because I always felt that, you know, while scaling up, without having funds or any resources, it was much more difficult.
It is.
As compared to someone coming
in. So you have to manage your business strategy a little better.
Yeah.
The third, which I think is important, be careful what kind of people you hire. You know, as you grow, you will hire people.
Yes.
But what happens is, you know, it is not about hiring the best that is there in the market. The best will anyway not come to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it is about hiring what I call fit for purpose. Which means at every stage in an organization, the kind of people you would pick are different.
Right.
So pick people who are most suited for your kind of an organization, keeping in mind the culture, the pace at which you're working, the chaos that exists, the uncertainties that they have to face. They have to fit into all this. So, you know, not everybody survives in chaos.
That's right.
So you have to keep that in mind. So that's the third bit that I would advise. Fourth, and not the least, is pick your investors extremely carefully. It's very easy to find investors these days because there are enough venture funds and enough PE funds and enough individual investors who want to invest in businesses.
Right. Yeah.
But picking the right kind, who has the same kind of a mindset, value system approach to a business is extremely critical.
So do you think it's important that your investor should share your
passion
for the business,
The investor, in most cases, will not share your passion, but at least understand your passion and share the fact that they have to leave you alone. See, the problem is not that. The problem is when they start imposing their own passion and in the process divert you from your passion is when it creates a problem.
Right.
Because a lot of them have ulterior motives when they invest, honestly. And that's true. I mean, if an individual has invested in five different companies, he wants all five to succeed, right?
Right.
So if he sees merit in asking two of them to combine and become and merge and become one, they will push it.
But it may not be in the interest of...
It may not be in your interest at all.
Right.
And that's the issue. So that's the ones you have to guard against.
Okay. That's great advice. That's something we are going to take away from this podcast for ourselves, and our listeners will too. With that, we're going to take a short break and we'll be back to discuss a few more books with Mr. Raj Raman.
Welcome back, guys. We still have with us Raj Raman and we'll be discussing his four favorite recommended books. The first book we're talking about is Triggers by Marshall Goldsmith. There's a very famous quote from this book which says that fate is in the hands of... Fate is the hand of cards we've been dealt. Choice is how we play the hand. So would you like to give us some insight?
I think I'll start from that.
Yeah.
I think that sums up the book beautifully. Prima facie, what Marshall talks about is how external triggers, which are not in our control, influence the way we think and react. And that sometimes becomes limiting factors for ourselves. A simple example that he talks about in the book is where he says there was one gentleman who believed that only results matter and created an organization culture, pushed everybody in the organization saying, I want to see results. What it did is it created a culture where people started taking shortcuts. Because the
result
message they read,
end goal.
The message they read is only results matter.
Right.
The method
is
not important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now that's what Marshall talks about. He says, listen, we are all influenced by such factors, subconsciously or consciously.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And we need to condition ourselves to not get influenced by these. And hence, make sure that every decision of ours is a choice and is not a reaction. I think that's the essence of the book.
Okay.
And that's so true because there are so many factors which, you know, subconsciously affect us when we're making decisions and you can't be rational about them. But the idea is to basically control your emotions and think more pragmatically. So
true.
I personally love that thought. The next book we wanted to discuss about was The Art of the Good Life by Dolph Robelli. So he talks about 52 intellectual shortcuts to wiser thinking. So probably maybe you could discuss, you know, any of those shortcuts which you've applied to your life successfully.
Listen, the best one that I, you know, if you read that book, the shortcuts that he talks about is only to take away the clutter from your life.
Okay.
I think your life becomes better if you remove clutter. Today, the challenge is in our world today, there are so many factors. So many factors, so many choices that exist that it forces us to take decisions on even stupid things, like whether I should take an Ola or an Uber. You know, it's a decision we have to take. It never existed sometime back, right?
So
the point is that. The point is, he says, cut out all the clutter.
Right.
The shortcuts he recommends, and one of the best ones that I love, is the one where he calls taking pledges.
Okay.
He says, you know, I used to always struggle, and I had the struggle because I relate to it.
Yeah.
Dessert. Mm-hmm. Correct? We all put on weight.
Yeah.
Sugar. Mm. Right? So, the question that we keep asking ourselves is, you know, every time dessert comes in, should I not? Mm-hmm. Can I not?
Right.
This one will have less sugar. This is likely to have more sugar, so I can eat this and not eat this. It's a torture. He says, in such cases, the easiest thing to do is to just take a pledge saying nothing, knowing it doesn't exist. So there is nothing called dessert that exists. So for me, I have used it.
And
I have just decided that desserts don't exist. So my meal ends with the meal, with the main course. There is no dessert. There's no concept of a dessert.
Oh, wow.
So you've been able to...
It takes away the clutter from me.
Right,
yeah. Then I don't
right.
have to struggle with this.
With this choice of...
Temptation, not so tempted. Should I try it? Should I not try it? So this is just one of the things that he suggests. So that's, you know, that's the way he says you deal with it. So what happens is you remove that decision from your life completely.
So you don't have to choose either way.
Yeah. So the thing is, the shortcuts that he recommends just says that all these things that don't matter, remove
them out completely.
Take the clutter out of your life. Focus on only the most important things that matter.
Right.
I think that's the essence of the book.
Okay.
But beautifully presented.
Okay.
I love Ralph Dobelli. Some people find him cynical, but I love him for the way he is, the way he writes.
I think another example of this is Mark Zuckerberg just wearing black t-shirts, or Steve Jobs just wearing the same clothes every day. That decision is just taken out of
deciding
the picture,
what shirt to
basically
wear.
Basically, they don't want
life.
To spend time on irrelevant
decisions.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's also a line that he speaks about, which is about plans are useless, but planning is indispensable.
Okay.
So
yeah, I think that goes off to is one of the shortcuts, the early ones that he talks about, is the fact that most of us assume that if we plan very well, okay?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's over. Which means you plan perfectly and everything will go as per clockwork and life. He says life doesn't work like that.
Right.
Irrespective of how well you plan, constant course correction is the name of the game.
That's also what you mentioned earlier, right? That at different stages in your organization, the requirements are different. So you have to keep molding and changing and resetting.
And he uses the example of autopilot. He said, you know, most people assume that autopilot means things run on their own. What they don't understand is the autopilot is doing 15 corrections every minute to keep the plane on course, which essentially means there is course correction
Wow,
that
I have
constantly
no idea about
happening.
That.
Every 4 seconds.
So he
says,
that's the key. The key is, no matter how well you plan, you have to constantly keep revisiting it and keep updating it, depending on the changes in the environment, the circumstances, the situation, the speed at which you're moving, you know, the challenges that you face, and everything changes because it's a dynamic world.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah, can't agree more with that. I think we're moving on to the next book, which is The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People.
Yes.
So tell us which of these habits should we start with? And
listen, this book is a classic. And I personally think it's my all-time favorite.
Okay.
It's a very old book. And I believe that anybody who wants to achieve anything in life must first read it.
Right.
You can actually reread this book
as many,
many
times,
times
as you
yeah.
time.
Yeah.
And
you
every time you read it, you learn something new
right.
out of
Absolutely.
It. It's such a brilliantly written book. Very simple concepts, but presented beautifully. I think the best one in that is the last one, where he says, sharpen the saw.
Right.
He says, you're not doing anything, but keep updating yourself.
Right.
So
right,
that
right.
when you have something to do, you are much better prepared.
Right.
It's like, you know, your business is not doing well. So you think, okay, I don't have to do anything. No. Prepare yourself for the days when you do well.
Right.
Yeah. That's the message.
That's our message with the library.
With the library. Sharpen your mind. Keep on sharpening it. I think this comes from someone had told me this story actually about sharpening the saw when I started off my journey as an entrepreneur. And they actually told me in the context to my employees, the story goes that two axe cutters were chopping wood, and during the break, one guy was eating his lunch, the other guy was sharpening the axe. And when the time came for a performance appraisal, obviously the boss chose the guy who was sharpening the axe so that he could keep on cutting more wood and increase his productivity. So this was one story that someone had just, I remembered it when I heard this, sharpen the saw.
You know, I personally think that it's one of the best books written on building yourself as a leader and building yourself as an individual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'd just like to take our listeners through the 7 habits though, so
Please.
That they have a better idea of what we're talking about. The habits mentioned are to be proactive, begin with the end in mind, put first things first,
yes.
Think win-win, seek to understand and then to be understood, synergize and sharpen the saw. So my personal favorites in this is seek to understand and then be understood. Because that involves listening to other people and, you know.
That's relationship building.
Yeah, right. Relationship building.
It's and very, I think, yes, I agree important. With you because that extends to the family as well.
Right.
See, that's yeah. one of the habits that clearly extends to the family as
right,
well.
Right.
Yeah.
I think the next book that we are moving on to is Blue Ocean Strategy. So, sir, tell us about this book.
Blue Ocean Strategy. I mean, listen, the reason I love this book is this is a book which, you know, came at a time when everybody was talking about core competencies, stick to your business, you know, all those issues that were.
Yeah.
And this book kind of threw open the game and said, listen, it's not about all this. It's about how you define your market space. Okay? So, think outside the box. Ignore all the constraints that exist.
Okay.
And think of where is your market? How can you create a market where nothing existed? And if you really think about it, if, you know, Google had not thought Blue Ocean, you wouldn't have had Google today.
Absolutely. Okay.
Right,
you know,
right.
And that's the truth. And examples that he gives, the biggest example that I find in that book, which is very interesting, is the Cirque du Soleil that, you know, that's coming Mumbai
to
as well.
Yeah.
You look at it, they changed the concept of circus.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yep.
They took an old concept. And they said, let's redefine the market.
Mm-hmm.
Let's redefine what we do. And figure out whether we can present it in a different manner.
This That's is exactly what you, the advice you gave us that day.
Yes.
When we met earlier as
yes.
well. Yeah,
so, you know, according to me, anybody who's starting off in a business
mm-hmm.
should read this book. Because it gives you insights. You don't have to read the whole book. Read chapter by chapter. Just dwell on it. Think about it. And see how it fits. How your business fits into that concept. Try and map your business to each of the concepts that they talk about. Believe me, there's immense learnings that come out of it.
Yeah, I haven't got the chance to read it, but I definitely will read the book now.
That's what I love about nonfiction reading. It's just so many stories that you can relate to your own business or to your own life and apply those learnings of these highly intelligent and successful people to, you know, try and pivot.
You know, I'll let
the right
you in
way.
On a trade secret of mine.
Yes,
I read most of my books more than once.
Okay.
Because every time I read them, there is something new that you learn from them.
Right.
And it's very interesting because at various stages in your life, as you read these books, you find that your learnings are different.
So
yeah,
is there a book?
Even in your business, if you read it at different stages, it would add
value continuously,
yeah.
right? So
yes.
is there a book that you read every year without fail?
Stephen Covey, I read.
Okay.
Without exception.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. I read chapters from Blue Ocean very often.
Okay.
Because
okay.
I do, I mean, as part of strategy advisory and consulting, you end up doing a lot of strategy work. So it's good to read. But yeah, I'm one of those, like I shared with you, I don't know whether it's right or wrong, but I'm one of those persons who parallelly reads 3 or 4 books at one time. So So, you know,
actually, that's it's very surprising that most of our guests who've come so far have been people who are reading 5-10 books parallelly at the same time.
Yeah, that's
and it's really wonderful. So my collection of books, mm-hmm. for example, most books I have read more than once.
Okay, wow.
And that's the truth.
Wow.
So it depends on the frame of mind that you are in, and you say, okay, I've not read this book for some time. Let me pick up and start reading. And then every time you read, you learn something new.
A favorite author you'd like to share?
Favorite author?
Yeah.
Well, I have not included my favorite author in this list. The Stephen Covey comes very close to it.
Okay.
Now, my favorite author is Malcolm Gladwell.
Masterclass.
I want to do his masterclass.
Believe me, there are 5 books that he's written.
Yeah.
Each
yeah.
one is a masterpiece.
Revolutionary. Yeah.
Each one is a revelation, and I love his books. I keep reading them again and again and again. You know, the first time somebody recommended the book to me, I said, okay, didn't sound very interesting, but I anyway picked up a copy.
Mm-hmm.
And believe me, I have not missed any of his books.
So which one was that one which was recommended to you?
See, the first one was Blink.
Blink, yeah.
And Blink is so well written, believe me.
Yeah.
He has a very clear voice in terms, like his
everything
concepts,
so well
his thoughts,
thought out.
Yeah.
And
his concepts are very well presented. I think that's a brilliant way of presenting how change happens in the world.
Right.
How small incidences, how small events
affect
you know, create large changes mm-hmm. in social behavior, in environment, in economic behavior.
Right.
Yeah.
So one of our favorites too at the library, I think, Outliers.
Believe me, it must. It has to be amongst the 50 books that you recommend people.
For
believe
sure,
me.
For sure. For
please.
Sure.
We've just added these 5 to it.
Thank you so much.
Do you prefer reading physical books or do you read on the Kindle as well?
Listen, I have a Kindle.
Uh-huh.
And I download a lot of books on it.
Okay.
But I'm an old-fashioned person. So I still like the feel of paper.
Mm-hmm. Yes, me too.
A book. I also think that opening a physical book is also one way of staying away from the electronic, devices that exist around us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, today our life is totally taken in by electronic devices.
Yeah.
So it's good to once in a while leave them away and say, okay, let me do this. You know, one of the things I would love to do and I'm planning to do is to go to a place which doesn't have connectivity here. Drop all the electronic devices, carry a few books. That's all I want to do.
That's a good plan.
Sounds
break.
Really peaceful.
I would call that a genuine break.
Believe me. For sure. So, we are going to end with a quote, maybe from your favorite author or one of your favorite quotes.
One of my favorite quotes. And listen, this has got no author. This is my quote.
Okay,
and
perfect.
I'd love to.
Even better.
I'd love to share that. See, one of my favorite things is, listen, learning comes from experience. Okay. And profound learning comes from devastating experiences. That's the truth of life.
Wow. That's a profound quote. So I think very appropriate.
Yeah. Very, very appropriate. And yeah.
No, I share this with all my clients and tell them, listen, it doesn't matter if you go through a devastating experience. Think
learnings
of the profound learnings
that
you get out of it.
Exactly.
That's a great way to look at things.
I can relate so many things to what you've just said. Sometimes you really shine through your hardest times. That's how it works.
It makes you a better person.
Yeah,
and I think that's
does.
The way you see. You grow the most when you go through the toughest times.
Yes.
Right.
As a person, as a human being, as a leader, as a businessman.
Agree.
Thank you, Mr. Raj Raman, for being with us today and sharing your insights on these books. We look forward to having you on our show again. The Smelting Cauldron is available at all major retailers and on Amazon.com. And a big thank you to all our listeners. You can follow the Open Library Project on LinkedIn, Instagram, and Facebook for latest updates on our events. And stay tuned for the next paperback podcast on IVM Podcasts. Happy reading. You can follow the IVM Podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at IVM Podcast.